Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment, Romance.
Romance, bringing you stories by the world's greatest romantic authors. Stories of the gaiety of love, the tragedy of love, the triumph of love. Tonight, the makers of Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum are proud to bring you transcribed from the pen of the celebrated English novelist John Galsworthy, one of the best-loved stories of our time, The Apple Tree.
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Here's a taste treat you can enjoy indoors, outdoors, at work, or at play. The cool, long-lasting mint flavor refreshes you. The smooth, steady chewing helps keep you fresh and alert, adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious.
Now, with Anthony Ellis starred as Frank Ashurst, here is the first act of The Apple Tree.
It was our wedding anniversary, Stella's and mine. We'd motored to Torquay, where we'd first met, to celebrate. And Stella had suggested that we take a lunch and drive out on the moor.
It'll be so lovely there, Frank, and quite warm in the sun. I can do some sketching while you read.
We drove several miles and stopped on a high hill with a view into the deep valley beyond. Stella wandered off somewhere to sketch, and I stretched out in the sun and watched the sky and longed for I knew not what. There was no reason I should be unhappy, even mildly disturbed. My life had been pleasant and my marriage quite successful. But as I lay there, it seemed to me there was something missing. Something that had nothing to do with pleasant lives or successful marriages. The familiar words of Hippolytus echoed in my mind. The apple tree, the singing and the gold. The apple tree. And then quite suddenly I remembered. Once I had stood on the selfsame hill. I knew the valley into which I looked, that ribbon of road and the old wall behind. Life has moments of sheer beauty, of unbidden flying rapture, but they last no longer than the span of a cloud's flight over the sun. I had stumbled on just such a moment in my own life. I had stumbled on a buried memory, a wild, sweet time. It was after my first year in college, a friend of mine, Robert Carton, and I were making a walking tour of the country around Torquay. But my knee, which had been injured in a football game the year before, was giving me trouble, and I knew I'd have to give up the tour. We were looking for a farmhouse, somewhere we could put up until I got better.
There must be one around these parts somewhere. You probably shouldn't walk much further. Why don't I go ahead and reconnoiter?
Righto.
Hello. Looks as if I won't need to.
It was a girl. The wind blew her crude, dark skirt against her legs and lifted her battered tam o' shanter. It was clear she was a country girl, for her shoes were split and her hands were rough and brown and her dark hair waved untidily across her forehead. But her lashes were long and dark, and her gray eyes were a wonder, dewy as if opened for the first time that day.
Hello.
Hello.
Could you tell us if there's a farm near here where we could spend the night? My friend's getting pretty lame, can't walk much further.
There's our farm, sir.
Oh, could you put us up?
I'm sure my aunt would be glad to. If you like, I'll show you the way.
Well, we'd appreciate it very much.
It's not very far. Just down in the valley.
Are you a Devonshire girl?
No, sir. I'm from Wales.
You're very young, aren't you?
I'm 17, sir.
Oh. What's your name?
I think I'm David.
That's a good Welsh name.
I'm Robert Carton. My friend here is Frank Ashurst.
How do you do to both of you? I'm sorry about your leg, sir. It isn't far now. Right through the apple orchard, we're there.
Just through a narrow wood, we came on the farm. A long, low, stone-built house with casement windows. And a farmyard where pigs and fowls and an old mare were straying about. And in front, an old orchard of apple trees just breaking into flower. A woman stood by the door watching us as we approached.
This is Mrs. Narracombe, my aunt.
Yes, we met your niece on the road. She said you might put us up.
Well, I can if you don't mind one room. Megan, get the spare room ready and a bowl of cream. The gentleman will be wanting tea, I expect.
Yes.
Is there a stream where we could bathe?
There's a stream at the bottom of the orchard and a small pool. It's not deep, though, about a foot and a half, maybe.
Oh, that's big enough, Mrs. Narracombe. Which way?
Down the lane. It's by the big apple tree.
Oh, splendid.
You can't miss it. Tea'll be ready when you come back.
Will you gentlemen care for more tea?
No, thanks, Megan.
Then I'll take the things away.
Megan.
Sir?
How many of you live here?
There's my aunt and her two young nephews, the boys you saw as you came. Nick and Rick, they're called. Then there's old Jim, the hired man, and Joe.
Oh, quite a family.
Oh, yes, sir. If there's anything else you want, just call.
Pretty thing, isn't she?
She's like a flower. A wildflower you come upon unexpectedly in the woods.
She has caught your fancy. Bit poetic for me, but I see your point. Emotionally, she'd be wonderful. Just needs awakening. What do you say we go into the kitchen and see more of her?
No, no, no thanks. You go. My knee hurts. I'm going to bed.
Your knee's badly swollen this morning, Frank. I think if they'll have you here, you'd best stay on a few days.
It does hurt like the devil. But what about you?
Oh, I have to get back to London.
Oh.
Someone can drive me into Torquay, and I can get the train from there. That is, if you don't mind being left alone.
As a matter of fact, I shall like it. Nothing to do but dream and watch spring on a farm. I've always wanted to do that.
Well, good luck to you. Look me up when you get to London. And, oh, yes, be careful of the wildflowers.
It was good to be left alone, and they were glad to have me. Megan and her aunt worried about my lameness as if I'd been one of the family. Only the boy Joe seemed to be unhappy at my presence. I would look up and suddenly find him watching me with a kind of stolid suspicion. Particularly was this so when I was with Megan. From the very first, I felt that Megan liked me. She performed little kindnesses for me that weren't part of her duties, and as the days went by, I began to expect them. When I woke in the morning, the thought of her made me anxious to be up and downstairs. Even if I didn't talk with her, I liked to be near where I could hear her singing at her work. One day, I was down by the big apple tree, and the little boy Nick was playing there by the pool.
Watch out, mister. The gypsy bogey will get you.
Ooh. And what do you mean by the gypsy bogey?
The gypsy bogey sits on that stone there by the apple tree sometimes.
Oh. What's he look like?
Don't know. Never seen he. Megan says he sits there, and old Jim seed it once. He was setting there not afore our pony kicked in father's head. He plays the fiddle. Megan's afraid of he.
Oh?
But she's not afraid of you. She says a prayer for you.
How do you know that, you little devil?
When I was asleep, she said, God bless us all and Mr. Ashes. I heard her whispering.
You're a little ruffian to tell what you hear when you're not meant to hear it.
Nick? Nick?
Here we are, Megan.
Oh, and I've been looking all over for the rascal. You go into the house at once, and he wants you. Go on with you.
I told you about the gypsy bogey.
Go on now. No more nonsense out of you. Children are silly sometimes.
I don't think so. They're often more sensible than grown-ups. Tell me, Megan, what's the gypsy bogey they're talking about?
He brings bad things.
Oh?
There are bogeys in the rocks. They are men who lived long ago. There is one that comes here and sits on that rock.
I shall have to come down one night and sit on his rock then and have a talk with him.
Oh, please don't. Something will happen to you.
Does it matter if anything happens to me, Megan? Would it disturb you a lot? Well, I dare say I shan't see him because I suppose I shall have to be off soon.
Oh, no.
Would you like me to stay?
Yes, very much.
Then I will stay. And tonight, Megan, I'm going to say a prayer for you. It was the following Sunday after my talk with Megan that I was lying in the orchard, listening to the birds sing. I heard the gate swing open and I saw Megan running through the trees with the boy, Joe, in hot pursuit.
Joe, leave me alone, please. Leave me alone, I tell you.
Megan,
Don't, Joe, don't kiss me, please.
But I...
I beg your pardon.
It's you.
Well, he's gone anyway.
I'm so ashamed that you saw. How dare he do that?
Because he's in love with you, probably. You want me to punch his head for you?
You're laughing at me. You're laughing at us. All of us.
Oh, no. No, that's not true, Megan. You must believe me. That's not true.
Wait.
Your hair. It's caught in the apple blossoms. Don't move, Megan. Oh. You're beautiful with those clusters of pink blossoms in your dark hair. Megan?
Oh.
You're very, very sweet, Megan.
You too?
Megan, come here tonight to the big apple tree after they've gone to bed. Megan, promise?
I promise.
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste, and the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you keep going at your best. So for real chewing enjoyment that's refreshing and long-lasting, always keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. Healthful, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum will make every day more enjoyable.
And now, the second act of The Apple Tree, as we return to romance. For a long time, after Megan had fled away through the trees, I stood there, alone in the orchard. This was the beginning of what? She was so lovely, so unutterably lovely and untouched. I felt somehow as if I'd beheld a miracle, and it had transformed me.
Mr. Ashurst.
Oh, hello, Joe. What is it?
Oh, you got something to say to you.
All right. Say it.
You can go away from here. Us don't want you. What do you stay here for?
Oh, because I want to. It pleases me.
It won't please you when I've bashed your head in.
Indeed? And when would you like to begin that?
And Megan don't want you.
You can go to the devil. I went out into the garden. I was a little sick. A few words from the lips of an angry boy had suddenly tainted a thing of beauty and made it ugly. I walked on toward the wild meadow. Jim, the hired man, was working there.
Morning to you, Mr. Ashurst.
Good morning, Jim.
That brave weather for the grass.
Jim, they tell me you've seen the gypsy bogey, too. Is that right?
It was in my mind as 'twas there.
Was there a moon?
Yes, very near full. But 'twas only just risen, gold-like behind them trees. Of course,
Megan knows. She's seen him, sure.
She's sensitive. She feels everything.
Ah, seem very loving-hearted.
Loving-hearted. Yes, that was it. What was I to do about this girl that loved me so? And whom I loved? I walked for a long time. In the orchard, I broke off a spray from a crab-apple tree. The buds were like Megan, shell-pink, rose-pink, wild and fresh. And the opening flowers white and wild and touching. It was nearly 9 when she came. She came straight toward me and into my arms. And our lips sought each other, and we stood there together for a long time in the moonlight. Megan? Megan, why did you come?
Sir, you asked me to.
Megan, dear, don't call me sir.
What should I be calling you?
Frank.
Oh, I could not.
But you love me, don't you?
I could not help loving you, and I want to be with you. That's all.
All?
I shall die if I can't be with you.
You shall be with me forever, Megan. We'll go to London. I'll show you the world.
I don't care where we go. If I can be with you, that is all.
Tomorrow, dear. Tomorrow I'll go to Torquay and get some money, get you some clothes that won't be noticed. And when we get to London, if you love me well enough, we'll be married.
Oh, no, I couldn't. I only want to be with you.
Oh, Megan, Megan, I'm not nearly good enough for you. Tell me, when did you begin to love me?
When I saw you in the road and you looked at me. The first night I loved you. But I never thought you'd want me.
Oh, my darling. My darling.
Oh, look, look. The gypsy bogey.
Where?
There.
Well, I don't see anything.
There, sitting on the stone under the tree.
Oh, but Megan, there's nothing there. Only the moonlight on the rock.
I saw him, and I'm afraid it's a bad sign. I must go in.
Darling, Megan, there was nothing there. There's no gypsy bogey. It's only your imagination.
You don't see the bogeys, but I see them, and I know. Good night. Good night.
Megan. Megan! I heard the gate click, and I knew she'd gone. Instead of her, only this old apple tree and the scent of the woods. A little part of her. And above me and around, the blossoms, more living, more moonlit than ever, seemed to glow and breathe. The next morning, I left early and went to Torquay. I wanted to get some money, and I had to cash a check. But I found that without credentials, I would have to wait until they wired the London bank for verification. While I waited for the answer, I shopped for a dress for Megan.
Now, here's something, sir. It's very smart, really, and should just suit the girl you describe.
But the more I looked at all those smart, modish dresses, the less they seemed to suit Megan. It was incredible that Megan, my Megan, could ever be dressed in anything except the rough tweed skirt and battered tam o' shanter I'd always seen her wear. I couldn't make up my mind. And yet, she couldn't wear her old clothes in London. They wouldn't suit there either. I couldn't make up my mind, and I walked the streets of Torquay, confused and undecided.
Well, Frank Ashurst.
Phil. Phil Halliday.
I haven't seen you since Rugby. What are you doing here in Torquay?
Oh, I'm just looking about. I was waiting for my bank to wire back confirmation for my signature so I can get some money.
Well, if you're not lunching anywhere, come with me. I'm here with my sister Stella. You'll come?
Well, oh, all right, yes, yes, I should love
that's
to.
That's splendid. Oh, we'll have a lot to talk about. And Stella will be pleased. It's been pretty lonely for her with nobody but an older brother for company. Come along.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, great Scott, I'd completely forgotten the time. It's after 3, the bank's closed.
Well, that's great. That means you'll have to stay over in Torquay. You can't get any money today.
Oh, but I can't do that.
We should love to have you. I know Phil's getting bored to death with me, and we've had such fun.
Yes, it has been fun. I've been rustic for so long, I'd almost forgotten how pleasant London talk was.
Why don't you come on a picnic with us tomorrow?
Oh, I'm afraid I couldn't,
oh,
really.
Oh, please do.
Well, what is there to call you back to the farm? You'll only have to come back tomorrow to cash your check.
Yes, that's true. I haven't thought of that. Very well, I'll stay.
Oh, good.
Ah, that's great. We'll make a day of it tomorrow.
I sent a wire to Mrs. Narracombe. I hoped that Megan would understand. Just this one day away from her wouldn't matter. It was the life that I'd always known. Gay, cheerful, normal people. Just a few more hours of their life before I left it altogether didn't seem a wrong thing to do. Stella was a pretty thing. Curious, the calm way she looked at me, as if she understood everything and would never question too deeply.
Oh, hasn't this been wonderful?
Wonderful, wonderful. Can I help you with the picnic things?
Never mind, thanks. I'll rinse them off in a minute. That's one nice thing about Dartmoor picnics. There's always running water.
I think your food was too rich for Phil.
Hmm?
Look, sound asleep.
Dartmoor is beautiful. But wild, pagan, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, completely away from civilization. Unsophisticated. Untouched.
Just picture a bit of Dartmoor put down in the middle of St. James's Park.
Yes. But then it wouldn't really be Dartmoor anymore, would it?
No, I suppose not. Wild things don't transplant well. Well, we should get started if we want to get back to Torquay before dark. Phil? Phil, you sleepyhead. Come along, wake up.
Oh.
Come along, Phil.
Oh, Stella. Oh, such a wonderful dream you interrupted.
You silly. I'll just wash these plates up a bit in the stream and be right back.
She's all right, that sister of yours.
Good as they come. I think she's fond of you, too.
Oh, well, really, now she hardly knows me.
Oh, well enough, I guess.
Come along, you two. If we don't hurry back, we'll be late for dinner.
That night, I couldn't sleep. I thought of Megan. I was with her again under the living, breathing whiteness of the blossoms. The moonlight on her upturned face of innocence and humble passion. Megan. Poor little trusting Megan. How much did I really love her? How much was madness in the spring and the wild beauty of her? I thought of Stella. Cool, poised, and friendly. She belonged to the world I knew and understood, a world that understood me. Megan didn't understand, and she could never belong. She loved me, but was that enough for either of us? I didn't know what to do. Phil and Stella had asked me to go with them to Totnes. I hadn't given them a definite answer, nor had I sent any further wire to Mrs. Narracombe. Today, I had to decide. I knew that. I went out for a walk along the cliff wall. There was a high sea running. There weren't many people out. I'd walked a mile or so, I guess, before I saw her. There she was, Megan, in her old skirt and jacket and tam o'shanter. She was looking for me. I knew that at once. She'd look up into the faces of the passers-by, wavering, lost-looking, and pitiful. I followed her for a long, long way. Once she stopped and leaned against the seawall, and I wanted her again. I wanted her kisses, her abandonment, all her quick, warm, pagan emotion, and the wonderful feeling of that night under the moonlit apple tree. Yet I couldn't move toward her. I couldn't let her know I was there. But suddenly I realized that to go back to the farm and love Megan out in the woods among the rocks with everything around wild and fitting, that was what I wanted. And that was impossible. But to transplant her to the town, to keep her in some little flat, and when the wild ecstasy wore off, to find her commonplace, unable to fit into my world and no longer able to go back to her own, that was worse, far worse. I took another long, last look. That pathetic, wistful figure staring out over the sea. Goodbye. Megan, goodbye, my darling. Goodbye.
Three days.
3 days later, I went back to London, traveling with the Hallidays. And on the last day of April in the following year, Stella and I were married. All this I remembered as I sat there on the hill in the warm sun. And as I remembered, an ache for a lost youth, a hankering, and a sense of wasted love and sweetness gripped me. And the sun was no longer warm. I got up and walked away down the road. There was a man standing by what I saw was a grave, an old man. The grave was by the crossroads, and there was a moorstone to the west, and on it someone had thrown a blackthorn spray and a handful of bluebells.
Afternoon to you, sir. Nice day for a walk.
Can you tell me whose grave this is?
Well, no, that's quite a story. It's a poor soul that killed herself. That was a long time ago. She was a pretty girl, but too loving-hearted.
Too loving-hearted?
Ah. I was working for Mrs. Narracombe in them days, and she was, too. There was a college gentleman staying with us. She took a fancy to him. He was a nice fella, too. And then one day he went away sudden-like, and he never come back. After that, she was crying a lot, and then one day I found her. Ah, she was lying in a pool by the old apple tree, by the stone where the gypsy bogey sat.
Oh.
Ah, that was June then. But she'd found a little bit of apple blossom and stuck it in her hair.
I walked away. I'd heard enough. On the top of the hill, I lay down and buried my face in my hands. Megan's face brushed close. Megan, with a spring of apple blossoms in her dark, wet hair.
If I can be with you, that is all.
Oh, there you are, Frank. Look at my sketch. It's pretty, don't you think?
Very pretty.
Still, there's something wanting, isn't there?
Yes. There was something wanting. The apple tree. And singing. And the gold.
Remember, friends, to make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. There's lots of cooling, real mint flavor in every stick. And chewing Wrigley's Spearmint helps keep you feeling fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, wherever you go, keep some healthful, refreshing Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum.
Romance is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and brings you the greatest love stories of today and yesterday. Tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, you have heard John Galsworthy's The Apple Tree, starring Anthony Ellis. Editorial supervision is by John Meston, and musical supervision by Alexander Courage. Next week, Wrigley Spearmint Gum, the chewing treat enjoyed by millions, will bring you another story enjoyed by millions. Esther McCracken's delightful story of a young girl very much in love and the problems that confront her just before her quiet wedding.
Be sure to be listening next week when the makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum bring you Quiet Wedding. This is Bob Stevenson speaking, and this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.